Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Running a published adventure that will span the majority of the careers of your PCs presents unique challenges. Will Johnson joins me on the show today to discuss these challenges, and we have some tips for running adventure paths. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 37 of Game Master's Journey, and welcome to season 3. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker, and I've got a great show for you today. This is the first part of what will be a 3-part interview with Will Johnson all about adventure paths. Now, I am using the Paizo term adventure path partly because Paizo is kind of the king of these kinds of published adventures, and partly because no one else has really come up with a better term. So that's what we're going to call them, just so that we all know what we're talking about. So what is an adventure path? It's simply a published adventure that is large enough in scope that it's an entire campaign, not just a single adventure or a series of adventures that go together. So in D&D or Pathfinder terms, these often will take beginning characters, level 1 characters, to level 15 or beyond. And these can easily take a year or more of real-time play to complete, or real-world play. I'm not saying you're playing for a year solid, obviously, but if you're gaming, you know, once a week, one of these will easily take you at least a year to complete. So I am currently running Tyranny of Dragons, which was the first adventure path for D&D 5th edition that was released by Wizards of the Coast. I began that right in the beginning of January this year, so at the very beginning of the year. So here we are in July, and at this point, I'm pretty close to completing the first book of the adventure path. So this particular adventure path came in 2 books. The first book, called Horde of the Dragon Queen, took characters from level 1 to level 8. And then the second book, Rise of Tiamat, takes characters from level 8 to level 16. So here I am about 7 months in, and we're about halfway through. So, you know, if we keep at this pace, we'll complete the campaign in about 14 months. That gives you an idea. The second adventure path for D&D is called Princes of the Apocalypse, and that one they released in one single book. And then the adventure path for D&D coming out this fall, which I can never remember the name of, is also going to be in one book. Now, as we discuss in the interview, Paizo's adventure paths, they do a little bit differently. Instead of coming out in 1 or 2 hardback books, their adventure paths come out in 6 softcover books. But they're still very much the same in that, you know, they usually take you from level 1 to level 15 or so. So adventure paths are really awesome for busy GMs and adult GMs who maybe don't have as much time to prepare for a campaign as we'd like. So just as using a published campaign world or setting can save you a lot of time world building so that you can just get to gaming at your table with your friends, virtual or real table, in the same way, running an adventure path can save you a lot of time coming up with adventures and a larger scoping campaign, and you can just get right to the action. And even if you have all the time in the world to prepare for your games, an adventure path can still be really great because you can spend the time that you would have otherwise used coming up with the things that the adventure path provides, like, you know, the basic adventures and the storyline of the campaign and locations and maps and NPCs and all that stuff. You could take all that time that you would spend doing that and instead use that time developing what's in the adventure path, fleshing out NPCs more, adding your own NPCs, adding your own hooks for the players, adding your own events and adventures and changing things. And, you know, if you really do that, if you spend the same amount of time you would have spent on your own coming up with the campaign, if you spend that same amount of time improving what the adventure path gives you, then you're going to end up with a much deeper and more multi-dimensional campaign in the same amount of prep time than you would have doing something on your own. I mean, it's just mathematics, right? Also, not all of us are great at designing campaigns. And so these can be very helpful if that's you. If you're just not the greatest person at coming up with adventures or coming up with adventures that tie together into a larger arc, you can let the pros do it for you. And they can also be invaluable to new game masters as a way to learn by doing methods of creating campaigns of your own. So you can see how a group of writers and designers do it and learn from that. And that's kind of the thing I'm doing with my world building and that I did with my Obsidian Monolith campaign, where I basically took you through my process of building a campaign and building a world to kind of show you how I do it so that you can hopefully learn from that. So you can get the same kind of thing by running or even just reading a published adventure path. So all that said, obviously I'm a big fan of adventure paths. I am not a fan of one shots. I mean, they're fine if you, for some reason, you know, you're getting together with a certain group of people and you're just only gonna have one session, or maybe you wanna try out a new game and you don't want to buy into a whole campaign, you just want to try it out. You know, one shots can be good for that, but personally I don't particularly like running one shots, and I certainly don't like playing in one shots. That's just my preference. You know, when it comes to things I like to read, I would much rather read a novel than a short story or a novella or something like that, because I really like, you know, larger stories. I like character development. I like being able to see characters grow and change over time, which is really hard to do with a short story. And the same thing with a one shot versus a campaign. I think that's a really good analogy or parallel, right? A one shot is like a short story and a campaign is like a novel. So, you know, in a one shot, your character development is non-existent or at least very limited. And yeah, I'm just not a fan. I would much rather run a campaign. But that said, running a campaign is a lot of work, because it's not just coming up with enough adventures to get your characters from level 1 to level 20 or get your characters through a year of gaming in real world time or whatever you're trying to do. But it's also the added effort and work of making those, you know, fit together and make sense and have a larger story. And I know some people want to do like sandbox things and have there be no story. But honestly, the successful sandbox campaigns that I've run and played in and seen and heard about, they all had stories. It was just up to the players to decide which of those stories they're going to pursue. You know, if you have a true sandbox campaign and there's no story, that's going to be a dreadfully boring campaign to play in and to run. You know, if you think about movies or TV shows or books, you know, you never see a movie or a TV show or a book where there's no story and it's just people going about a normal life and just random things happening to them. There's always some kind of arc to it, whether that arc is a plot-based arc of, you know, this is the story of what happens, or it might be a more character-based arc where the character starts in one frame of mind and ends up in another. But there's always an arc. And if there's not, you know, no one's going to publish that story or make that movie, because it's not going to interest people. So I think the same thing is very similar for campaigns. So I like campaigns. I much prefer them to single shot adventures or even short adventures. But they are a lot of work, and so it's really nice to be able to get a published campaign that does a lot of that work for you. However, all that said, as awesome as I think adventure paths are, there are some pitfalls that you want to be aware of. And the first of these is that buying a published campaign and running it is not a replacement for game prep on your part as a GM. In fact, my experience has been that you will need just as much prep time maybe even more prep time to prepare for an adventure path as you would need to prepare for a campaign of your own creation. And to really do an adventure path justice, you need to be well versed in the entire campaign before you start. And Will and I talk about this in the interview in more detail, but you're going to want to foreshadow future events in the campaign, and you're going to want to provide hooks for your PCs to draw them into the story. And you're going to want to do all this in a way that the events of the campaign seem seamless and natural to your players instead of feeling forced and railroady. So just to let you know what my prep looks like. So I'm running Tyranny of Dragons right now to give you an idea. The first thing I did was I read the entire adventure path at least once, usually at least twice. Personally, I've read the whole thing a few times, but I read it twice before I started actually running it. And since then, I've read it at least one more time in its entirety. So first I read the entire adventure path a couple times, and then I go back and I read the first book of the adventure path again, at least two more times. And the reason I'm doing this is I want to first have a really good idea in my head of the overall arc of the entire story. I want to know how this begins, how it ends, and how it gets from the beginning to the end. I want to know who the important NPCs are. I want to know what the important events are. And if you're lucky enough that you have a photographic memory and you can read the thing once and you've got it all, then that's awesome for you. But for most of us, it's going to take more than one reading to really have all that firmly in mind. And then once I have the big picture in mind, then I want to read through the first half or sixth of the campaign, depending on what product I'm using. Read through that first book again a couple more times to really have, you know, this part of the adventure that I'm getting ready to run even more firmly in mind. So after I've done that, then I start preparing for the first adventure. And as part of that, I will read the first adventure again. So at this point, I've read the first adventure five or six times at least by now, and now I'm going to start preparing for that first adventure. So each time as I'm running the adventure path, each time I come up on another adventure, like I finish the first one and the second one's coming up, then I read that adventure again. So I get near the end of the first adventure. Now I'm going to read the second adventure again and prepare for that. And a lot of times I will also read the next adventure too, to kind of see where I'm going. So I'm running the first adventure, you know, maybe the first adventure is going to take four sessions. I'm three sessions in and I see, okay, another session or two, we're going to be into the second adventure. So now I read the second adventure again, start preparing for that. But I also read the third adventure again, just to kind of keep solid in mind, you know, where I'm heading. So this means that yes, by the time I run a particular adventure, I've read that adventure at least a half a dozen times. And this is because, you know, it's not only important to know the adventure I'm running inside and out, but I also want to know how it fits into the campaign as a whole. You know, it's really important to know things like the NPCs and what roles they're going to play in the future of the campaign. So not just that, like, if there's an important NPC, so I can try to keep that NPC alive, but so that I also know, well, what's that NPC's role in case the PCs do kill him? What's another NPC that can fill that role? And also so that I can roleplay these NPCs properly, because a lot of times in adventure paths, you're going to have NPCs that come up again and again and again. And so you want to be consistent in how you roleplay those characters, and you want them to be very developed as far as their personality and whatnot, so that they seem more real, because the players are going to see them time and again. In this way, you can also handle the unexpected things that your players will inevitably throw your way without screwing up something that's going to happen later in the adventure path. And this is something I learned very early in my GMing days, the first few times I ran published adventures, and these weren't even adventure paths, they were just published adventures, where I wouldn't really know the adventure well enough, and the PCs would do something in the beginning, and I get to the end and I realize that this thing that's supposed to happen in the end won't work because of something the PCs did. And I wasn't aware of that. And so I get to that point and I don't know what to do. where if I would have known all along that this thing needs to happen at the end, as soon as the PCs did something that made that not possible anymore, I could have way back then been figuring out how I'm going to handle that and how I'm going to get through that, right? Instead of being blindsided by it and having to have everybody take a break while I figure this out. And the second pitfall, I think, is that even more than any other published adventure that you might run, you're going to want to customize the adventure path to fit you and your players. You'll want to make sure that you have really good hooks for every PC, and you'll want to make sure that this is an adventure that you're all going to enjoy. You're going to be playing this thing for a year or more, so you want to keep the interest and engagement of everyone high throughout the entire campaign. And please note that this includes you as the GM, right? You want this to be something you're going to enjoy, because nothing is going to kill your campaign faster than if you lose interest as GM. And third, you have to do this kind of juggling act as a GM running one of these things and finding a balance between keeping the adventure path on track so that you can actually complete it, and also reacting and adapting to what your players are doing. In my experience, you will be able to finish the adventure path no matter what the players do. If you're doing your homework and you know what's going on the whole time, you'll be able to do it. It just may end out playing out very differently for your group than it does in the book, and that's okay, and that's awesome, right? The important thing is that you are able to flow with your players' choices and that you aren't too rigid in trying to keep them on the rails. And I found that the less well-versed I am in the adventure I'm running, the more rigid I am, because I'm very afraid that something the players do are going to screw up something in the future that I don't know about. Where when I know the thing inside and out, I'm much more able to just flow with what the players do, because I know the whole story. I know how it all goes, and I can come up with ways to make things still work, even though the players are doing something totally unexpected. So, you know, like the saying goes, there are many paths up the same mountain, and a good GM can always find ways to get the PCs where she wants them to be, while at the same time giving them full agency, or at the very least, a very convincing illusion of it. Because, you know, we as GMs, we know that a lot of times player agency is actually an illusion, right? You know, you give them three doors and you ask them which door they're going to go through, and you know that it doesn't actually matter which door they go through, because whichever door they pick, the thing that you want them to encounter or experience is going to be behind that door. And it's like Schrodinger's door, right? What's behind a door isn't even defined until the PCs pick a door. And, you know, that's a very tried and tested kind of GM trick, right? To give your players choice, but at the same time be able to tell the story that you want to tell. So a lot of times, you know, that player agency is an illusion, but really, as long as that illusion is convincing, it doesn't matter that they don't really have the agency that they think they do. All that matters is that they feel like they have agency, right? Wasn't it Yoda that said your perception defines your reality? Well, there you go. All right, so that is a bit of an intro to Adventure Paths. And now I'm going to bring Will online and we're going to talk all about it. And again, this will be a three-part interview. So we will continue this discussion in the following two episodes of Game Master's Journey. So I'm going to have a quick word from our sponsor and then we'll bring Will on.
We all have busy lives, and the hustle and bustle of modern day living can often leave us feeling anxious and stressed. Do you find yourself longing for your free time, yet when it arrives, you can't unwind? Do you feel restless and on edge? Are you having trouble sleeping at night? Are you not finding satisfaction in your romantic relationships? If you are suffering from any of these symptoms, Audible Books is a new therapy that can help you escape from the grind of your routine. You can sit back, close your eyes, and enjoy a beautiful fantasy world, or explore the stars, all without leaving your most comfortable chair. Ask your doctor if Audible is right for you, and take the first step to a richer life today. You can try Audible for 30 days for free, courtesy of Starwalker Studios. Just visit the website for your favorite podcast at starwalkerstudios.com and go to the bottom of the latest episode show notes for details. Audible Books. Enjoy a good book today.
I'm really excited to talk about adventure paths.
Yeah.
And you have a lot more experience with them than I do.
Yeah, I've run or played in quite a few. I haven't had a chance to watch your videos yet of the live play. I noticed you're on what, like your 19th episode now of Tyranny of Dragons?
Yeah. Yeah.
How far along is that? Does that actually represent, you know, in terms of like for the first book, are you motoring through that pretty good? Or are you almost done? Or
yeah, there's 8 chapters in the first book, and we're just about to start chapter 7.
Okay, so yes, you're doing good.
Yeah, we've been playing since January, so yeah. It's going to take more than a year to get through the whole thing.
Yeah, well, that's not surprising. And book 2 should be stronger, right? Because they actually had rules.
Yeah.
When they were writing it.
Yeah, and the first book is really linear.
Yeah.
And the second book opens up a little bit more.
Right.
I think it's going to be a lot better.
Cool. Yeah, I feel bad for not watching the videos, but...
Oh, that's all right.
I've got about 40 podcasts I follow, and so... Horde came out, like, right as the rules were being published, right? With 5th edition.
Yeah.
And I know that had to be rough, you know, but I know that with the second book, they at least had the rules out for a while, and now with the new, sort of the new adventure path that they've got, the
Princes of the Apocalypse.
There you go. I know you're running that as well. And I mean, does that seem to have the same pace, or is that paced a little differently? Or
I'm actually playing in that.
You're playing in that. Okay.
Yeah, but I do know that our DM has said it kind of seems like they, I don't know if I want to say they learned from mistakes from the previous one, but this one, he says, is very much like there is plenty of time for downtime. There's no ticking time bomb. And he's really encouraging us pretty much whenever we want to just take a few weeks to do whatever.
And, cool.
Which I really like.
And that's the way Temple of the Imperium, you know, the it's based on. I mean, it's based on Temple of Elemental Evil,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that one didn't, I mean, you certainly felt motivated to rescue all those slaves, but at the same time, you did feel like you could take some downtime if you needed.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they kept that pacing. I mean, it's Sasquatch Games did that, right? So that's Rich Baker's company that did the design work on Princes of the Apocalypse, and they did a great job with Primal Fool, which is their campaign setting they just put out. And Rich did some fantastic work at Wizards of the Coast. So, I mean, they've got really, you know, these Kobold did Horde of the Dragon Queen, and Kobold Press has got great people too. So I like this tactic that Wizards is taking, where they're getting great third-party companies to design some of their adventures while they concentrate on the core books, but at the same time don't have a release schedule that just is unrelenting.
Yeah. Now I got to ask you, have you heard about the new one, the new adventure path? Into the Abyss or something like that. It's called, I can't remember what it's called.
Is that for 5th edition too now?
Yeah, it's the one coming out this fall.
No, I haven't. What is that going to be about?
I was really wanting to know your opinion because it's going to be in the Underdark.
Okay.
And one of the, you know, when they're promoting it or one of the things they're saying is that your characters will adventure alongside Dritz Duerden to fight all these demons and everything coming out of the Abyss. And I'm like, that seems more like a bug than a feature to me. Like, people are already really sensitive to all the Mary Sues in Forgotten Realms, and now you're going to have one adventuring with you. I mean, it kind of sounds like he's going to be in the party with you, which seems,
oh my god,
like not a great idea.
Everybody would be trying to assassinate him, I would think. I hadn't heard about that. That's actually a little sad. I'm one of the few that never was a huge fan of Salvatore stuff. You know, so I don't know. That's it seems like they've done some really good stuff for the Forgotten Realms with the Underdark. I know that with 3.5 they had a pretty good module that was, you know, a hardback book that involved the Drow. But yeah, I would really recommend that. I guess it would depend on how they do it.
Okay, I found it here. It's called Rage of Demons.
Rage of Demons. Okay.
And well, see, the thing is it says fight alongside Dritzdu Urden in the new Dungeons and Dragons storyline on computer, console, or tabletop. So maybe you're fighting with Dritz like in the MMO or in like Sword Coast Legends and not, you know, because it's all of them.
I would hope he's like a general.
Yeah.
Shows up and tells you, hey, I need you to do this. And you go and do that. But I mean, the last thing I would want as a player is to be fighting next to Drizzt.
Yeah, it says the demon lords have been summoned from the abyss and players must descend into the Underdark with the iconic hero Dritzdu Urden to stop the chaos before it threatens the surface. So I really hope that that's more about like the video games and not the tabletop RPG.
Yeah. It's like people are going to be like, I poisoned Dritz in his sleep.
Yeah.
I tie him up. I'm going to sell him to Artemis.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's like, you know, so I don't know. I just, it seems kind of cheesy to me, but you know.
Yeah. The first time I say, so what do you do? They're going to be like, I kill Dritz.
Yeah. So who's developing this? Well, that's really crazy. It's going to be, so I guess they're probably developing it as an RPG, as a computer game.
Well, what they do is they have Dungeons and Dragons Online or, what is it? Neverwinter?
Neverwinter, yeah.
And then they have the Sword Coast Legends that's coming out.
I gotcha.
And then they have the RPG, the tabletop. So all of these storylines, like Princes of the Apocalypse, are in all three.
Gotcha.
So like Tyranny of Dragons, you can go kind of do that in the MMO and presumably in Sword Coast Legends when it comes out. So it's kind of hard to know, you know, maybe Dritz is just in the I mean, in a video game, it'd be cool. Right, but not in a tabletop RPG.
Rumors of powerful demon lords such as Demogorgon, Orcus, and Grazit are terrorizing. Wow. So I don't know. This could be kind of crazy.
Everything except for the thing about Drit sounds really cool to me. It makes me really excited.
Yeah.
Because I love demons, and I love the Underdark.
Sure. I think, a lot of it will be depend on how they present it. I would hope they downplay Drit in the tabletop version.
Yeah, or he could be maybe like your patron. Like he's the one that sends you on the quest, but he's not like coming along with you, you know?
Yeah, because I've back in second edition when they made the transition, the Time of Troubles transition, they actually released scenarios that were for the Time of Troubles and they sort of followed the novels and you basically were playing the characters from the Time of Troubles that become, you know, so you're playing Kelimvor, you're playing
Midnight.
Yeah. Or you're playing your own PC who's, you know, side by side with them.
Okay.
And so those scenarios were really bad. They were not good. The books were okay, but the modules were less impressive. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that you're basically playing a passenger, you know, alongside.
Right.
You know, you're not only on the tracks, but you don't have any real power over what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I mean, that just really removes the agency. And so that's always my fear whenever they introduce this major NPC that you'll be fighting alongside of is, are we there to watch Dritz be a badass? Or are we going to be able to do our own thing without Dritz getting in the way? You know,
right.
So I would hope that the PCs are able to, you know, select their own future and have their own agency.
Yeah.
Regardless of Dritz in the situation or not.
Yeah.
So that's why I say, I mean, I guess I wouldn't mind seeing him show up as like a general or someone who offers advice once or twice.
Right. Yeah.
I would hope they keep that to a minimum.
Or he just has something else that he has to do. So he can't deal with this. So he asks you to, and that's the last time you see him, you know?
Sure. And I'm really bad. I used to be super up on the Forgotten Realms. I was a regular on Candlekeep and I really was down with anything and everything Forgotten Realms, and fourth edition's changes were so traumatic that I just sort of dropped off the bandwagon. And so I haven't paid a lot of attention to what, you know, what has happened, what happened during fourth edition and then what's happened since. I understand they're trying to kind of put things back together.
Yeah.
But I don't, I'm not 100% up on, you know, like who's alive and who's not alive. And because I know that when I used to run stuff, I liked using Kelimvor, not Kelimvor, Tower in Waterdeep. I'm trying to remember the name of the wizard that was out of Blackstaff.
Oh, Kelbin Blackstaff?
Yeah, Blackstaff. I used to use him quite a bit as a GM. But the players wouldn't realize they were even working for him. It was one of those things where, cool. you know, I would have him be disguised and I'd use fake names and everything else. And he was basically using them as disposable agents. I didn't mind using the NPCs, but I didn't want to beat my players over the head with it.
Right.
So I liked him because he was always in the middle of like 15 different plots. and sometimes he's working with the Harpers, sometimes he's working against the Harpers. And so I always viewed the player characters as, since they don't belong to any of those organizations, they're a great neutral organization to that you can use as sort of puppets or tools. And you know, that way the Harpers don't know what he's doing because he's got these adventurers off doing it for him.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Candlekeep. I was just on there for probably 2 or 3 hours yesterday. I've been trying to I missed the whole fourth edition thing completely, which yeah. I'm really glad I did. And I wasn't a huge fan of the whole Time of Troubles stuff in third edition.
You're right.
And so I'm trying to make sense of kind of what state the realms are in now, what happened, you know, since third edition, what, you know,
sure.
And there's not a lot of information on a lot of it as far as, you know, what they're doing for fifth edition. You know, they've said that they're kind of undoing a lot of the stuff that was done in fourth and even third edition, but not really many details. And I spent a few hours like going through all the, you know, Ask Ed Greenwood posts and stuff.
Yeah. Aren't those great with the hooded one?
Yeah. Yeah. But I started getting so frustrated. I'm like, you know, in the amount of time it's going to take me to figure all this shit out, I could just build my own world.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I agree with you 100% there. The thing that always amazed me was how great Ed was at just off the cuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, people would ask about, like, what is the situation with the town guard in this particular city? And it's not even a major city. It's like a minor city. And he just immediately is like, the town guard operates in groups of five. They wear the following colors. They will have, you know, these are the titles of all their watchmen. Their watches are like, it's just, you know, and just, he's just spewing this out and you're going, oh my God, I want to play at this guy's table. I mean, it's
obvious. Oh, yeah.
He has a really clear vision and he's able to just on the spot come up with fantastic detail.
Yeah.
You know, reading those was great. Just realizing like how much this was someone's home game. And that's, I think, the thing that is easily forgotten is that the Forgotten Realms was originally, he was writing stories before D&D or any adventure game even exists. He was writing stories set in this area. And then when role-playing games came out, he realized, hey, I can run role-playing games in this setting. And, you know, it was his home group. And a hooded one that answers those questions and relays the information to him is one of the people from his home game.
Yeah.
So you just realize, like, how cool it is. And, in fact, I think that my three favorite campaign settings were all similar. Glorantha was created by Greg Stafford, and that's for RuneQuest. And Greg was an anthropology major and social anthropology especially. And so his stuff's all based on mythic settings and mythic world. And the idea of the mythology is what makes it such a key element of the game setting. And so, you know, Glorantha is just phenomenal from that perspective.
Cool.
In terms of mythology and pantheon. And the other one was M.A. Barker was a linguistics professor. And he came up with the world of Tekamel. The Empire, the Petal Throne. And so that was a phenomenal game setting as well. It never really quite got as much game support, but I know that even right now, they're still publishing stuff. They just came out with Bethorm, the Plain of Tekamel, which is based on M.A.R. Barker's setting. And all three of those settings are just fantastic, but they all existed before gaming because those people were writing stories about those settings and then just realized, hey, with these games, we can play them in here.
Very cool. Awesome.
But yeah, I agree with you. I think if you're going to run your own home game, it's probably easier to focus on a smaller set of information. I mean, there's just no way that you're not going to have players that are going to want to digest this much.
Yeah. If I could get a hold of the first edition gray box for Forgotten Realms, I'd just use that.
I've got it. I've been playing since 78, and I just collected. There were years where I wasn't playing, and I would just keep buying. But yeah, so I mean, I've got all that stuff, and in fact, some of it has information that's not been reprinted. And occasionally, I would go back there to those early source books and find great plot hooks, you know, for modern stuff that I was setting there. So yeah, there's some great stuff in that first edition. There's a lot of plot hooks in the first edition Gray Box.
Yeah.
I know that you're now doing a thing on world building and,
yeah,
I think that's really important. Lately, I've been doing a lot of stuff with world building, and my focus has been more communal world building in terms of like all the players at the table contributing.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's that. I love it. Before you even get started, people have already bought in. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And so that's I'm excited at Gen Con. I'm going to be playing a game called Spark, which is supposedly a communal world building.
Oh, cool.
That's a new one to me.
Yeah, that's kind of. What I'm wanting to try with this is I'm doing my world building to kind of set like a foundation, but I'm not going to go like real microcosm into stuff.
Right.
And then really let my players kind of take over and say, oh, what's in this town? You tell me, you know? So, cause I've never really, I've been very old school, and all the people I played with, you know, where the DM just does it all and you're sure. playing in his world. And, you know, I've heard about, you know, fate and systems like that and how, you know, you get together and you build the world together. And that sounds really cool. And I really want to try that and see how it goes.
I think I've talked to you about Microscope and Kingdom are two systems that I've used that they're awesome. I mean, it doesn't always get you the gold you want, you know, so you may run a game of Microscope and have a good time. But when you end, you're kind of like, okay, do I want to run a game in this setting? And you might say no.
Okay.
But other times you're going to end up with a really cool, because Microscope, you're basically building a timeline. And so the players are all contributing to building that timeline. And that way they kind of feel like they're connected to the world that they build.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to wrap up episode 37 of Game Master's Journey. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you would like to reach me, please email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can reach Will if you're interested in maybe learning more about the Pathfinder Society, especially if you're in his area in California. I think it's Central Valley, he said. I'm not sure. It's willj@cvpathfinder.com. You can find me on Google Plus, just search for Lex Starwalker, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website starwalkerstudios.com, and you can find a lot of helpful links there, including a link to our own Google Plus community. Please join us there. Finally, please help support the show and help me keep the studio going and keep this particular show going. There are a lot of great ways that you can do so. They're all super easy. You can try Audible Books with a 30-day free trial courtesy of Game Master's Journey. You can find details to that at the bottom of the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. You can also use our Amazon referral links when you shop on Amazon, and that is also at the bottom of the show notes. At the top of the show notes, you can find our Patreon button, which will take you to our Patreon page where you can become a patron of the show, or you can give us a one-time donation using the pink donate button at the top of the show notes. And finally, also at the top of the show notes, you will find our iTunes and Stitcher buttons, and you can use those to not only find the show on iTunes or Stitcher if you want to subscribe using one of those services, but you can also leave us a review there, which I would really appreciate. So once again, I want to thank you for listening to and supporting Game Master's Journey, and I want to welcome you to Season 3. I have a lot of fun episodes planned for this season. I hope that in the coming week, you can find some time to play your RPG of choice. Game on!
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.